New from U.S. author Mike Palachek, Camp America. Here's what American poet David Ray has to say. Mike Palachek reminds me of Socrates, the gadfly who asked unwelcome questions, Diogenes with his lantern looking in vain for an honest man, Chekhov, the man with the hammer challenging a complacent family to share their meal, Kerouac, the ever-on-the-move, somewhat hysterical searcher, and he also reminds me of many Americans who as children were so blasted with propaganda that they're devoting the rest of their lives to challenging the lies and all who tell them. In this land where babies are brought by storks and buildings collapse due to unpatriotic bricks, we need the gadfly, because no leader, preacher, guru, or saint will wake us up, though the doomsday clock is ticking close to 12. David Ray, American poet, author of The Endless Search and The Death of Sardanapalus and other poems of the Iraq Wars. To order Camp America and all of Mike Palachek's books, go to the New American Dream website, www.newamericandream.info. Howard Zinn writes, Mike Palachek writes with passion, wit, and always with a strong social conscience. Camp America, from author Mike Palachek. The website again, newamericandream.info.
It's just a ride, and we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream, with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachek, brought to you by the Rock Creek Free Press.
Here he comes!
Well, listeners, we apologize for the slight technical difficulties to kick things off. We'd like to welcome you to the very first edition of the New American Dream radio show. We'll bring news and views about what's happening in America today, and we'll have some guests to help us out. We'll ask uncomfortable questions, but that's not our sole purpose. We want to celebrate the good stuff, too. One good thing is that we can do a show like this, that Mike can write a bleeding-edge novel every year. We can stand up for free speech, free press, and freedom in general. It's by exercising those rights we best preserve them. That's why I believe that we're the true patriots. We care. Now, without further ado, I'd like to introduce my co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer. I used to write reviews about his books. Now it's my honor to publish them. Mike has a unique vision, a quirky imagination, and an incredibly strong voice for America.
Hello, Chuck. How you doing? It wouldn't be right if we didn't have some snafus at first, would it?
Well, that's right.
you didn't tell that everybody who our guests are, but here's on our first inaugural show, we're proud to welcome special guest Frank Cordero from Des Moines and poet Ava Bird coming to us from Berkeley. And we look forward to those segments later on in the show. Chuck, what does the concept of the New American Dream mean to you?
Well, Mike, a great American of our time told us that he had a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. And he died for his dream. He was one of many in that decade of assassinations. But his dream did not die. In many ways, we're closer to it now than we were then. But in many ways, we fall woefully short. I have a new American dream. I dream that we can work together and play together in peace. I dream that we can help each other instead of tearing each other apart. I dream that we can lead the world by doing good rather than dominating it or failing to do so because we imagine we're better than everyone else. I dream of a world of equal opportunity where no one starves and we all accept each other, faults and all. I have this new American dream. What do you think, Mike?
Well, the new American dream, the time I came up with the idea was, it was after the election of Obama, and I had to go from the thing of being for something rather than against something. So I decided I would believe in Obama. I believe in his hope and change, and I, of course, we've come to see that it's not come about, and that he never really had that in mind anyway. My dream about the new American dream is, well, the old American dream was about acquiring things, about getting a house and blah, 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 a better job. And I think the new American dream should be about all those good things that are in the Constitution, about all those good things about America that we've always said that we are about, but we've never really gotten there. And especially now, we're falling so far off it. You know, I saw, I was coming out of the gym the other day and I saw in the news rack, there was a USA Today and it had a big picture of Ronald Reagan and there was an insert of George Bush and I didn't get the paper, but I think it probably was about the upcoming centennial of Reagan's birth. And then Bush probably was saying something about it. And I thought, you know, we're still in that part of America where that honors Reagan and Bush. That's terrible, actually. And my dream is that what we'll have someday is on that front page USA Today would be like Phil Berrigan. Phil Berrigan died in 2002. I think he was 79. What would he be in his mid-80s today? And to honor Phil Berrigan instead of those criminals, Reagan and Bush, that would be part of my dream for the new American dream. And you have to know that Barack Obama knows the whole truth about the 9/11 attacks. He is complicit. He has lied. He has continued the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan based on a lie, and he knows he is lying. For what reason? Who knows? But based on Nuremberg, Barack Obama is a war criminal, just as George Bush and George Bush before him and Bill Clinton and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and Condoleezza Rice, the whole bunch. And yet they go on living their normal lives. It's wrong and it's frustrating. I really deep down believe in this whole thing. To me, the most important thing about our history is the history is the most important thing, period. JFK, RFK, MLK, COINTELPRO, CIA here and overseas, Paul Wellstone, Oklahoma City, Waco, Pearl Harbor, the Bush non-elections, Leonard Peltier, the whole history of George H.W. Bush, 9/11, and on and on. You know, I really can't understand why any sort of learning other than, you know, learning about physics, biology, math, or really any type of religious study, I suppose. I mean, we can't really find out if there is a God, not yet anyway, but we should be able to know the truth about our own history here and now, and we don't by a long way, and that really, really bugs me. Taxes we pay for these lies, this lie that the military protects us, this lie that the USA stands for freedom, this lie that it's okay to kill. I wonder if we will ever have the courage to do what the people of Egypt are doing today. It's not because we don't have a reason. It's more in line with, have we got anything better to do today? The ones with the power desperately depend on our being afraid. We cannot be afraid.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachek.
We do thank Rock Creek Free Press for sponsoring us. In addition, Peter B. Collins, who does free podcasts at www.peterbcollins.com, is also sponsoring us in support of the more progressive voices and critical thinkers in the media. We thank both of our sponsors. We're now entering a segment where we present some news briefs. We all know by now the daily newspaper in our town or the local television station or the national news hour or the local radio news hour is not going to cover anything that's upsetting to the power elite, not even National Public Radio, not even the Sunday Bulletin at Our Lady of Good Rapport. And it's a sorry situation. It's far too similar to the way things were in the Soviet Union, back when there was one. The newspapers were state-controlled. Pravda, or Truth, was the voice of the Communist Party. Izvestia, or News, had official Soviet news. A popular saying at the time, Pravda nyet Izvestia, Izvestia nyet Pravdi. Excuse my accent. But it means, in the truth, there's no news. In the news, there's no truth. Their answer was samizdat. Individuals reproduced censored publications by hand. They passed the documents from reader to reader. Oh, we don't have censorship here, of course.
Oh, no, of course not.
Well, it's important in any society to have a way of passing along accounts of what really is going on. The internet, podcasts, Twitter, other man-on-the-scene reports, these are the modern version of the printing press that first made this sort of thing possible on a large scale. But the government wants to be able to shut down the internet in emergencies. You think maybe they want to spin the news to their liking before letting it out? Think about it. And now, from the Nuclear Resistor, a newspaper put out by Jack and Felice Cohen Joppa since the 1980s. Dateline, January 27, 2011. The Creech 14 are found guilty, sentenced to time served. In a 20-page written decision, Judge William Jackson found 14 people guilty of trespass as charged, ruling that their defense did not meet the legal requirement of imminence for acquittal based on necessity. The Creech 14 were arrested during an April 2009 demonstration at Creech Air Force Base in Indian Springs, Nevada, protesting the remote piloting of armed killer drones from Creech in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. All were sentenced to time served. The Creech 14 are Father John Deere, Dennis Duval, Renee Espeland, Judy Hominich, Kathy Kelly, Father Steve Kelly, Mariah Klusmeyer, Brad Little, Libby Papillardo, Megan Rice, Brian Terrell, Eve Tataz, Father Louis Vital, and Father Jerry Zawada.
And Chuck, this is also from the Nuclear Resistor. I'll read the letter here. This is our talking about Helen Woodson, who many of us know. Dear friends, over the years we have spent time in prison or supported other activists who have been in prison for acts of conscience. We write to you now with a special request on behalf of Helen Woodson. Back in November of 1984, Helen was part of the silo pruning hooks action. She went to a Missouri nuclear missile silo along with Larry Cloud Morgan, Father Carl Cabot, and Father Paul Cabot. With sledgehammer and jackhammer, the group followed the biblical mandate of Isaiah to turn swords into plowshares. They were convicted and received a varied numbers of years in prison time, prison for their action. With the exception of a few days, Helen has been in prison ever since. A couple of times in past years when released, she immediately engaged in an action that resulted in arrest and being returned directly to prison for violating parole. Now Helen Woodson is scheduled to be released in September of 2011 after 27 years behind bars. Helen is looking forward to getting out, and at the age of 67 and with health issues, has decided to now retire from activities that might return her to prison. It's been a long time since she's lived on the outside. She'll leave prison with a sweatsuit plus books that she's accumulated, and that's it. Since she will leave prison with no source of income or health coverage, she plans to apply for government assistance, but that can take 6 or so months for someone to find out if they're eligible to receive benefits. In the meantime, in addition to things like food and clothes, she'll need to purchase medications for multiple health problems at quite a significant cost. So she has asked friends to raise funds on her behalf, not money to be used while she is in prison, but for the things she'll need once she's released. Her living situation once she's released is still uncertain. It has been challenging for her to develop a plan that the BOP and Department of Justice find suitable, since Helen will be subjected to many conditions and restrictions after her release. The couple who have invited her to live with them are still waiting to be contacted to answer the questions and receive the home visit needed to determine if Helen will be allowed to live there. Helen is very much hoping that they and their home will be approved. If not, she is not sure where she will be able to live, and it's possible additional money will be needed to be raised to enable her to rent a small place to live. In the meantime, until this becomes more clear, it will ease her mind significantly if she can at least know that she'll be able to pay for the medicine she needs and things like a winter coat. Can you help? Since the beginning of the nuclear age, many thousands of people in the U.S. and around the world have been arrested for anti-nuclear civil disobedience, and hundreds have spent time in prison for these actions. None of these people, not even long-imprisoned Israeli nuclear whistleblower Mordecai Vanunu, has spent more time in prison than Helen Woodson. We ask that you join us now in providing her with needed support as she embarks on this huge transition after her many years in prison. Please be as generous as you are able. Any amount from $1 to $1,000 will be gratefully received. Checks and money orders can be made payable to the nuclear resistor with "For Helen" written on the memo line and sent to the nuclear resistor, P.O. Box 43383, Tucson, Arizona, 85733. Secure online donations can be made via PayPal at the nuclear resistor website at nukeresistor.org/donate. Thank you. That's from the nuclear resistor regarding Helen Woodson.
Thank you, Mike. That's quite a story. I'd like to mention now that all the addresses and website URLs that you hear on this show will be available on our site within a day after the show. So if you didn't get a chance to write anything down, don't worry, it's not lost. All you have to do is visit our site. That's theshow.newamericandream.info. All right, now I'm going to continue with the news. This is from the National Catholic Reporter. Mary Nall reinstates the School of America's watch funding. U.S. Missionary Order, Mary Nall Fathers and Brothers, has reinstated grant funding to the School of America's watch, the anti-military organization founded by Mary Nall father, Roy Bourgeois. Mary Nall suspended their support of the group in May because Bourgeois publicly supports women's ordination. The reinstatement of funding came after talks with Mary Nall father, Michael Duggan. SOA watch organizers told NCR about this yesterday, and there's more available at ncronline.org/news/Mary Nall reinstate School America's watch funding. It's a dash in between each of those. Again, all URLs will be available from our site. It's probably easier to visit the site and click.
And this from the New Hampshire Peace Action. Dear friends, Don Booth passed away peacefully Friday morning, January 21st, with family at his side. He was 94. We were very fortunate, as Don had squeezed every last available second out of his life right to the end. He took so much joy in the people around him that even when he was confined by his heart condition to sleep nearly 24 hours a day, when he did wake up, it was inevitably with a huge smile and arms outstretched to celebrate his time with us. If he had any regrets in life, we did not hear them. He was very much at peace with himself. Of course, there is still unfinished business of this world of ours and the troubles of its 7 billion people. No doubt he is still carrying those concerns with him now in his own way. We are also very fortunate that he lasted as long as he did. He got the maximum years, months, days, and hours out of a cardio system that was steadily failing for quite a number of years now. How many times did we think we were going to lose him earlier? For more information or to leave a remembrance of Don Booth, visit www.donbooth.wordpress.com. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to New Hampshire Peace Action, 4 Park Street, Concord, New Hampshire, 03301.
And from the New York City War Resisters League, there's a number of upcoming spring actions. I'm going to read a couple of them to you now. On March 19th, a Saturday, public war tax resistance display in Union Square. It's from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's organized by the New York City War Tax Resisters and New York City War Resisters League. Also on March 19th, White House Civil Disobedience, organized by Vets for Peace. The New York City War Resisters League also is asking for opinions. They want to know how much interest there is in going to the Pentagon on April 8th, as opposed to doing civil disobedience in New York City, as opposed to doing either. They have a doodle poll set up, and there'll be a link to the poll available on our website. They're setting up an organizers network conference call as well. Mike?
Okay, this is from the Omaha Catholic Workers regarding Father Jack McCaslin. Father Jack recently learned that he has lung cancer. He is now at Bergen Mercy Hospital, room 386, Omaha, Nebraska, to determine what kind of treatment he'll receive. He is facing this recent challenge with courage and a strong faith. We ask you to remember him in your prayers and know that as you participate in actions for social justice, he is offering his suffering in solidarity with you. Just a note on Father Jack McCaslin, an 82-year-old priest from Omaha, Nebraska, is a veteran of the civil rights movement since 1965. The peace movement almost forever and has been a voice for the poor and voiceless in Nebraska in the halls of D.C. all of his life. He was instrumental in starting and supporting several Catholic worker communities in the Omaha area. He is currently a major supporter and mentor for the folks at Omaha Catholic Worker. He has served jail time for crossing the line at Stratcom, demonstrated at SOA, and recently been ministering to the elderly in nursing homes. He's been a strong advocate for reform in the Catholic Church and a member of Call to Action. He's loved being a priest, administering the sacraments, and serving people, especially the poor. All his life, he has been a person who puts the teaching of the gospel into action. Father Jack last crossed the line at Stratcom on August 9th of last year. These days, he visits death row inmates regularly and lobbies for the end of the death penalty. Letters and cards can be sent to Father Jack McCaslin. His home address is 7323 Shirley Street, number 305, Omaha, Nebraska. For updates on Father Jack, people can contact the Omaha Catholic Worker, Jerry Ebner, or Mike Brennan. www.nonukes.org/CW Omaha. For these news briefs, I'd like to ask people to send them to me at my email address, mpalecek@rconnect.com, rconnect.com.
News briefs can also be sent to radio@newamericandream.info. That's a special address we've created for the show. This program's also being brought to you this week with the help of a grant from Walmart and the United States Department of Homeland Security. Remember, shoppers, Homeland Security begins with hometown security. You see something in the parking lot or the store, say something immediately. Report suspicious activity. I'll find somebody to talk to. We'll be right back. Hello, has someone helped you yet? I'll find someone. I'll be right back. I'm off in 2 minutes, but I'll get somebody else. If you need help, ask a Walmart employee. They'll provide assistance within 4 working days. You may wait on one of the plastic benches outside the men's and women's restrooms. You applied for one of our gift cards or store memberships? Welcome to Walmart. We're Walmart and the United States Department of Homeland Security. Thank you for shopping.
We would like now to bring in our first guest, Eva Bird. Eva, are you there?
I'm here. Hi. How are you doing?
How are you doing? I'm doing good. Thanks for waiting. Eva, you're from Berkeley, California. You're an activist writer, a raw food chef, and a divine seeker of sustainable living. And you're also the author of 2 new combustible, edgy, and hilarious books of poetry and prose, Rage Against the War Machine and The New Now. They're soon to be released by Beatitude Press of Berkeley. And for copies of these 2 books, you can write to Eva at ompoem@hotmail.com. Eva, how did you get started? Have you always been a poet? Did you grow up writing poetry?
Not really. I started writing later in... I needed a channel for some, I guess, anger might be a good word, anger and other things, but frustration at the systems that were, I felt, were enslaving myself, women in general, and populations in general. And I found poetry to be a way that I could say a lot with a little. And the poetry world welcomed me in with open arms, and I found it just to be a great tool for expression and also for sharing. I'm able to share this medium with myself. It comes from my heart and my soul and my mind. And people like it, so I share it.
That's really cool. You know, it's so hard to, well, when you see things happening in the world and then you, you sit down and decide to write a book or a poem in response to it. It's kind of hard to do that because you kind of want to do something that might have more of an immediate impact, but still, poetry and prose, eventually it has its day, doesn't it?
It does, and it's a way that you can have an audience. The revolutions start in living rooms and in cafes and places like that. And it's a way that people are gathering together and sharing things. And it starts out on a small level and it grows out from there. And you inspire others and they do their work and it kind of reverberates out. So it's definitely a way that I can get my frustrations out there in a socially responsible way that, ultimately I hope to inspire other people to find their voice of protest, of expression also, however that may come out for them.
Yeah, but do you have a couple poems you could share with us tonight?
I would love to share some poetry. I've picked out a couple poems especially. One's especially for Mike. It's called 9/11 Fairy Tale, and I'll actually read that second. The first one I'll read is called Voting is for Fools, and this is a response to some of the, futility that I've witnessed in voting, at least in the set system that we have presently. So this is in my new book. It's called Rage Against the War Machine. The poem is titled, Voting is for Fools. I registered to vote, and all I got was jury duty and these endless wars. Propositions by prostitutes for votes for clowns, wolves in suits, pimps in pursuit of an old lady's loot and a young woman's womb. I registered to vote, and all I got was a phony story about a bunch of dicks landing on the moon, tricked and poked by pricks pimping vaccines to teens with HPV and HIV and hepatitis C vaccines. I registered to vote, and all I got was rigged elections with PR stooges, psycho war criminals complicit in crimes, a bogus facade of false hope, stage-managed charades, and fraudulent conspiracy with no systemic change ever. I registered to vote, and all I got was a con job by cocks and cocksuckers, dicks and hoes, gangbangs through legislation, corporate rapes, and jokes known as popes, tax-exempt to molest. I registered to vote, and all I got was a tax write-off for millionaires, food shortage scares, slaughterhouse murders, more prison cages, and wars that continue to rage. I registered to vote, and all I got was a Great Depression, more rigged elections, a 9/11 fabrication, banksters' planned housing recession, a crashing dollar, economic desperation, domestic isolation, and the hatred of the whole wide, wonderful world. And what did you get when you registered to vote? So that's my poem on voting.
Thank you very much. And you know, what I get from hearing things like that is solidarity. is that someone, and thank you for writing that poem, because, you know, it's, you just feel so alone at times. And then if you see a poem like that, you know that there's somebody out there. So there's one, at least one other person out there like you. So thank you. And do you have another one for us?
Sure. This is called, I have one called 9/11/01 Fairy Tale. And this is in response to the biggest, or probably one of the biggest frauds of this century, which we all know all too well about. And I was part of a reading in San Francisco on Gandhi's birthday, and I actually wrote this on the public transportation system in the San Francisco area called BART. And I kind of scratched it out pretty quick. And I will cue it up and read it for you. So, 9/11/01 Fairy Tale. 9/11 lies, tried and true, tested on assholes on the moon. September 11th, 2001, beautiful autumn day, 9 a.m. naivety, hungover worker bees on coffee, stimulants and pills, commuters covered in track marks, tracing dollar trails, addiction, slick dicks and oil, poppy scheming, controlled demolition, CIA and Mossad, remote control airplanes, suicides at 69 floors up, but empty airplanes. American Scareways, united in deception, with Wall Street banksters down the street, tricksters sickly smiling, hustler hoes selling terrorists, strippers, conspiracy theories. Deluded fat Americans willing to buy any lie, cheap enough, dumb enough, scared enough. The last four letters of American is, I can. I can be a terrorist with my tax dollars. Free speech hollers, roller coasters of bunker busters, wars in the name of Allah, or God, or oil. Enemies of the weak, color alerts, and bloody money splashed on Iraqi babies, deformed mothers hidden in shame. Maybe one day, eventually, if you hear the lies long enough, you begin to see the truth.
Thank you very much.
So that's my 9/11 poem. I could go on and on about it, but I wanted to make it short enough to, you know, try to get everything in there. There's, of course, a lot more that could be said about it, but that's what came screaming out of me.
Very cool. Does it feel better when you're able to write something like that? I mean, to yourself?
It does, especially when I'm able to share it with the crowd. The San Francisco Bay Area and also Los Angeles has a really great poetry community, and it's very supportive. So when I read these things, it kind of enables other people to share their voices also. And this is one of the poems that really gets people talking and kind of revisiting a very dark part of American and world history that is actually fairly recent that we are still feeling the brunt of. So, and I just don't want the 9/11, you know, it seems like now when you talk about 9/11, it's just such a part of the past. It's like a passé thing, but a lot of people don't realize that was the event that's fueling what's happening right now in the Middle East, the war, the Iraq war, the Afghanistan. That's, you know, they are still happening. We are still bombing those countries with their tax dollars every day. And it all comes down to 9/11.
Yep. And that was by plan. That was the reason for it. And this whole continuing war was the reason for it. Do you have any upcoming readings that you'd like to tell people about, or anything about the new books?
Thanks for asking. I have a couple of readings coming up. I have one on February 12th in Berkeley, California, at Art House Gallery and Cultural Center. And that's actually a Valentine's Day show. So it's a peace and love poem, peace and love poetry show, and I'll be reading my peace and love poetry. I do have peace and love poetry, in addition to my activist-inspired poetry. And then I have a show on March 27th at the Beat Museum in San Francisco. And we'd love to have you come out. I know that you have listeners all over the world, and they're listening, and they are welcome to come. And as you are.
Okay. And the new books are Rage Against the War Machine and The New Now, soon to be released by Beatitude Press of Berkeley, and soon to be within maybe the month, with a couple weeks or a month, would you say?
I would say probably about 2 to 4 weeks is exactly right.
Okay. Okay. Well, people need to get those. And if to get copies, you can write to AvaBird at ompoem@hotmail.com. And I want to thank you, Ava, for your patience tonight and for being with us and for sharing your poetry and for caring enough to write those poems. And just thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike. I really appreciate your work, and I've been following your work for a couple of years now, and your site, The New American Dream, was very inspirational for me, and you'll see your name in The New American Dream in my book, thanking you, and I wish you the best of luck with your show, and anytime you'd like for me to be a guest, I'm always available.
We'll do that. That's absolutely, we'll do that. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Thanks for having me on the show.
You bet. See you later.
Okay, bye.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachek.
Okay, now it's time for Trivial America. The opening scene of The Big Lebowski. Put yourself in The Big Lebowski's shoes. Look on that first scene when he's in Ralph's grocery. He's buying supplies for the night. The dude is writing a check for 69 cents. The trivial question of the night is, what is the date on that check? The opening scene of The Big Lebowski in Ralph's grocery. The dude is writing a check for 69 cents. What is the date on that check to Ralph's grocery? Be the first person to email the correct date to me, and you'll receive a free signed copy of Camp America, my most recent book. It was out in the spring. So you can write to mpolachek@rconnect.com or radio@newamericandream.info. And also in Big Lebowski News, there will be a Lebowski Fest in Ohio. I think it's in April. I've never been to one. I'd love to go to one. They were in Minneapolis once. Anyway, I don't know. We'll see if they're ever around here. But if you go to the Lebowski Fest website, you can find out about the one in Ohio. Chuck, are you there?
Yes, I certainly am. And it's now time for our special interview with Frank Cordaro. Frank Cordaro is a lifetime career activist for peace and justice. He currently resides in Des Moines, Iowa, as a member of the Des Moines Catholic Worker Community. Their site is www.DesMoinesCatholicWorker.org. They provide daily hospitality to needy people. Cordaro helped found the DMCW back in 1976, so he's been at it a while. Frank can be eloquent on a number of topics having to do with activism and resistance. He told me he wants to tell you why more Christians should be in jail I thought that sounded like a great way to kick off the interview, so that's what we're going to do. Frank, I welcome you to our show.
Great. Great to be here.
Good. Tell us about this.
Well, it's not such a strange thing, Christians going to jail. When you survey the authors of the New Testament and all of the major characters, almost all of them ended up in jail, and most of them ended up martyrs, victims of capital punishment by the legitimate authority of the day. So there must be something about following the way of Jesus, at least initially, that would get you into a lot of trouble and put you in jail.
Well, that certainly certainly makes sense. You got your historical references.
When you take a look at the first century and you lift it up, the socioeconomic and political context in which Jesus lived and the early church lived in those New Testament times, and you take it out of the first century and then you lay it onto the 21st century, like a template, who's who, where, location, and lo and behold, what you discover is that if Jesus were born today, he may well be born in Bethlehem, but he wouldn't be Jewish. He'd be Palestinian. And the state of Israel would be like the occupied state of Israel in Jesus' day, and anyone who's working for the state of Israel these days and their oppression and boot on the neck of the Palestinians, they would be acting in accordance with 2,000 years ago the Jewish elites who worked with the Romans. So it's a it's really not that difficult. It's not rocket scientist to understand that any fair reading of the New Testament would tell you that Jesus sided with the down and out, the outcast, the sinners, the losers, and he went to bat for them. You do that these days, and you're going to end up in jail.
That's true. And not just over in the Middle East, but here in the good old U.S. of A., you're going to end up in jail.
Well, sure. That's the irony about being born a Christian and a Catholic in this country, the United States. I'm born in the Valley of Privilege and Empire. As the folks in L.A., Catholic Worker, put it in one of the articles I read in their newspaper, we have to commit a class suicide to get to Jesus. You really can't start in the position of privilege and wealth, especially as a male and a white male in this country, and get to Jesus unless you move to the margins of society, and you take on the responsibilities of our class, our violent, war-making, militaristic class. So the burden for us in this country, especially those of us of privilege, is to address the war machine, and more specifically, the god-awful weapons of mass destruction. And the military-industrial complex, the torture industry. Myself and some others just got back from Washington, D.C. The folks are trying to shut down the Guantanamo base. Most Americans think it's shut down because Obama said he wanted it shut down. Not true. It's still open. So we're out there with a number of other Catholic workers in Washington, D.C., and trying to do what we can to shut that thing down. Many of us risking arrest. Point of reference, like my friend Michael Polacek's hangout, has been off at Air Force Base. I've been protesting SAC and now the Strategic Nuclear Command for over 30 years. And I've logged in about 5 years of jail time for trespassing. They take trespass serious in Omaha.
Yeah.
Well, should I give you a chance to ask me a question?
I hope that in protesting Guantanamo, you don't end up seeing it from the inside.
Yeah. It's unlikely that folks like myself will find ourselves that low down the food chain of the empire. But it could happen. I've been into a lot of different prisons and jails through the years. Let me tell you, it's not a cakewalk.
What would you, if you were going to advise someone who wanted to do something but hadn't got around to it, what would you tell them to do first?
Oh, I would say get out of your comfort zone. Go somewhere and practice the works of mercy. Feed the hungry, clothe the naked, shelter the homeless. There are opportunities all over the place. And in a real sense, bridge the gap between yourself, a privilege, with those who are the least in your midst. That's the starting point. You do that, then you start reading your gospel and your New Testament, and then you find other brothers and sisters. We're everywhere. We're just kind of like invisible because no one notices us. Catholic Workers is a great, it's a great movement. There are about 180 communities in the United States, all over the country, and we're known for the works of mercy and our militant, nonviolent activism. And we embrace voluntary poverty, and we see ourselves, doing what Jesus would do if he were alive today in the United States of America. I'm a person of faith, so my first step is always with Jesus. You don't have to be a person of faith, and if the truth be known, most people who claim to follow Jesus don't really follow him. So it's kind of a bum rap to put out the put out there that you believe in Jesus when the practicing Christians these days are more apt to be on the side of the crucifiers than they are to be on the side of the crucified. So it's a bum rap to be a Christian, but I'm saddled with it. I'm convinced in my heart that this is the way to go. I'm just rather ashamed of how badly people who say they're following Jesus follow him.
Yeah. Well, I share that that feeling, Frank, and for that matter, I feel that way about being an American a lot of times. I'm proud of the things that we could do, but ashamed of the things we do. So.
Loyalty to the people always. Loyalty to the government when it deserves it. That's a saying from one of our blessed Catholic workers of years past, Eamon Hennessy.
Well, Frank, I'm afraid that we're running long here, and I'm going to have to cut this short. I hope that you'll come back and visit us maybe in 2 or 3 weeks, and we can continue.
Best of luck to Michael. May this radio show grow, and may his voice be heard everywhere.
Hear, hear.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Frank.
Bye.
Well, it's been a long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. On Monday morning at 2 in the morning, Barb Peterson dropped her kids off at Kids Corner Home Daycare so she can get to the 3 a.m. shift at Thomas's Eggplant. Now she's got the 73 Ford Impala that her father had in high school, and now that he's passed, she gets it, and now it doesn't work. Barb works on the line with Luisa and Margaret Rosales, selecting eggs off a conveyor belt and placing them in packs of 12 and 18. They come from the 100,000 hens laying in the 12 barns up on the hill and shipped by that conveyor belt down the hill to the plant, and then by 7 a.m., they arrive miraculously at the cafe and the diner and stop and go. Barb's second job is at Stop and Go. She doesn't work there every day, but the day she does, she gets her mom or her sister to help with the kids, and one weekend a month, she works the weekend shift at a group home. Margaret is Luisa's daughter. They came to Mount Liberty from Agua Prieta, Mexico. They crossed over to Douglas, Arizona, and evaded the Minutemen and Border Patrol and walked up here. Margaret is a junior at Mount Liberty Senior High School and wants to go somewhere to study nursing. In her used parka in the front pocket, Barb carried an unopened letter from her brother in Afghanistan. She put it there the day before when she got the mail, and it was still there when she kissed her sleeping children goodbye this morning. At work, she hung up her coat when she put on her white apron. She grabbed the letter and shoved it into her back pocket, then hurried to tie the apron and back on her way to her station. She jabbered with Louisa. They laughed together about how they both would be there until they died and not a single day more. Está, estás, estamos, están, Louisa said, and Barb repeated faithfully. She had asked Louisa to teach her. Barb thought about the call she had answered at home from the military recruiter a year ago. Barb had stopped by to do some laundry at home and visit with her mother and let the kids run a little. The recruiter, a Sergeant Collison, something like that, had asked to speak to Seth. She knew who it was, and she still went to get her brother, all the while searching around the house that she knew what this could mean. She had argued with Seth about signing up for the draft or registering for the Selective Earth Service, and he had said, you know, I have to. I don't have a choice. It's not that big of a deal. It's just something I have to do. Everybody does. Yes, I know, she had said. And besides, if I don't, how can I get money for college? I want to go to college, he said. At 10 a.m. break, Barb walked with Louisa to the lunchroom along the hard-shined concrete. They stood in line at the vending machines. Barb's quarters fell through on her first try. Then she heard the thunk, thunk, and then her cheese and crackers slid down pretty as can be. They found their regular spot, first picnic table on the second row, north side bench, facing the coffee machine. Louisa began to speak to Margaret in Spanish. Barb unwrapped her crackers, began to crunch and try to keep up with the conversation next to her, then reached to her back pocket. She studied the foreign postmark. She folded it again and began to return it to her back pocket. Then she sighed and set it again in front of her. She reached and pulled it out, unfolded it, and held it in front of her. Recognizing the slope script as if she were seeing Seth's face right there in front of her. The date was 2 weeks old. Her mouth quivered. Her lips moved as she read.
Dear Barbie, hey, how goes it? Long time no see. How's Suze and Thumper? They keep you hopping? I miss them. I miss you too a lot. Say hello to Mom. I'll write to her too. If you get this first, tell her hers is on the way, okay? Okay? This is something else here, sis. Not sure what's what. I guess maybe I haven't been here long enough. It seems like forever.
Barb could hear Louisa talking, and she was aware of others getting up and sitting down around them, but she felt them from far away, from Afghanistan, in the mountains with her little brother. They were playing wiffle ball in the backyard. She was throwing her lefty super-de-duper curveball because you could do that with a wiffle ball. And nobody could hit a wiffle ball curveball, but Seth did. He hit this one way over the peony bushes and into the street, and they were just playing together, the two of them, so they had to chase their own hits. So Seth says, I'll get it. And before she can say anything, he's running right past her on the pitcher's mound and across the yard and into the street, and this car that they couldn't see because the pickup was parked on the curb slams on its brakes and it squeals, and there's a sickening thud like cantaloupe on concrete. And she can't see anything because of the pickup, and she screams and runs and finds Seth on the pavement, and he's out of breath, and his leg is bleeding where the car grill cut him, and he's smiling. And he lay there bleeding and making Barb and the driver feel all right, that he wasn't really hurt, and he was okay, and it was his fault. He shouldn't have run into the street. Barb had just gotten her license and drove him to the hospital for stitches and took him off for ice cream afterwards and said that he should never have run off like that. I could have gotten it, she said. Oh, it's okay, he said. I wanted to. No problem. Don't worry about it. Barb read the front of the letter and turned it over, and then turned it over again and read the front again. And then slowly she turned it over again to read the back of the letter. She read about the routine of military life, the complexities, the inconveniences, the rules, the weather, and the people. And she read about dead people.
There have been casualties. We got hit. Two of our guys were killed outright. Three were wounded. One pretty bad. I'm okay. Barb, I killed somebody. God, Barbara, I shot someone dead. I walked up to him. He just lay there. I could not make him get up. He just lay there. He would not get up, and he was dead. He had a dead face and dead eyes and dead hands. His feet were dead. I touched him with my boot. I pushed a little more, And I was angry at him for being dead, and I just squatted down and cried. I cried because I knew I was ruined. This would never be all right. This would never be over. It would never be the same. Nobody could ever make it all right. I killed someone, and I'm afraid I'm dead too. I'm scared, Barbara. I'm dead, but I have to keep living. I'm not sure I can do that. Might be too much work. I'm scared. Really, really scared. Please help me.
Barbara read the last few paragraphs, but didn't really see the words. Louisa nudged her, and they were up, tossing their trash and pushing out the doors into the noise of the plant. Louisa was still visiting with Margaret. Barb turned away to wipe her eyes with her entire arm. Margaret worked for a while longer than left for school. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, she stayed until almost noon. At the end of the day, Barb was happy because she didn't have to go to Stop and Go today. She took her one free carton of eggs that she was allowed and headed for the Impala, praying it would start, then skittered off to get her kids. That night, Barb read the children a book and tucked them in. She kissed them. Buenas noches, she smiled. Buenas noches, Mom. Good night, they yelled. Shh, she said. Good night, good night. Barb walked herself downstairs one step at a time by the wooden handrail and went to the kitchen. She reached for the Diet Coke that had been calling her name and brought it with her to the table where Seth's letter sat next to the envelope. Barb read it again and then reached into the basket by the table for the phone book. She found the C's and ran her finger slowly down and up the lines. Collison, Collinson, Collinson. 709 9th Street, she said to herself. She killed her drink and returned to the refrigerator, bent down to pull something out and let the door close on its own. She stuck her head into the kids' room and then tiptoed in. She hunched down to see that both were breathing and sleeping. She hurried out, leaving the door open a crack. Barb hurried to her car, started it, and sped off. It's only two blocks, she told herself. Three, only three. She leaned over to get the flashlight from the glove compartment and shined the light on the house numbers as she putted along. 705, she said, 707, 709. She stopped, got out with her carton of eggs. She walked slowly toward the house, holding the carton in her right arm and grabbing and firing with her left hand. Boom, boom, boom. She walked and she fired until she was out of ammunition. She dropped the empty carton on the walk in front of the house and walked back to her car. She went home and ducked back into the children's room. They were sleeping, unaware of all that was going on outside at this very moment. Barb smiled to herself in the dark at the thought. She pressed her back into the wall and let herself slide down to sit. She sat there in the dark in her children's room, listening to them sleep, and she smiled and she breathed a deep breath, and all was okay for a while. That's the news from Mount Liberty, Nebraska, where all the police are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the journalists are about average. This program is brought to you also by Zeke's Free Speech Zone. The first question to ask yourself if you feel the need to speak is why. If what you have to say is so important, why not keep it to yourself? You are important. You are an American, the most important people in the world. Zeke's Free Speech Zone Incorporated of Des Moines. We're here to help you. If you feel overcome with the need to speak out, give us a call. We'll send someone right over. Free Speech Zone Incorporated. Don't leave home without us. Chuck?
Once again, I'd like to thank our real sponsors, Rock Creek Free Press and Peter B. Collins. I hope you'll visit our website, theshow.newamericandream.info. There are links from there to the rest of our network where you can find Mike's books, and also the original New American Dream website, at newamericandream.net.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thank you, Mike, and good night.
Good night, Chuck. Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Ken Lay, and good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
This world, man, before I go, I gotta tell you about the world that I see. And it's sad sometimes. You ever realize that we live in a world where good men are murdered and mediocre hacks thrive? You ever notice that? John Kennedy murdered. Gandhi murdered. Martin Luther King, murdered. Jesus, murdered. Reagan, wounded. Cancer 8 times. Now that fucker still walks.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
New from U.S. author Mike Palachek, Camp America. Here's what American poet David Ray has to say. Mike Palachek reminds me of Socrates, the gadfly who asked unwelcome questions, Diogenes with his lantern looking in vain for an honest man, Chekhov, the man with the hammer challenging the complacent family to share their meal, Kerouac, the ever on the move, somewhat hysterical searcher, and he also reminds me of many Americans who as children were so blasted with propaganda that they're devoting the rest of their lives to challenging the lies and all who tell them. In this land where babies are brought by storks and buildings collapse due to unpatriotic bricks, we need the gadfly, because no leader, preacher, guru, or saint will wake us up, though the doomsday clock is ticking close to 12. David Ray, American poet, author of The Endless Search and The Death of Sardanapalus and other poems of the Iraq Wars. To order Camp America and all of Mike Palachek's books, go to the New American Dream website, www.newamericandream.info. Howard Zinn writes, Mike Palachek writes with passion, wit, and always with a strong social conscience. Camp America, from author Mike Palachek. The website again, newamericandream.info.